my professor in Andalusia, from the University of Colombia, she would speak about Spanish from the perspective
of the Well, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to give a talk. This talk is going to be about tiling problems and spectral sets. Let me first make clear what kind of tiling problems I'm going to be looking at. Namely, I'm going to be interested in tilings of Euclidean spaces by one set of finite non-zero measure. I'm going to assume that the set is measurable and its boundary has measure zero. And I'm only interested in translational tilings, which means that I want to be able to cover the whole space by disjoint translate of the set so that the different translates don't overlap except possibly for the boundary. These are some examples of such tilings. In dimension 2, these are the only two convex sets that tile the space in that way, the hexagon and a rectangle. For a hexagon, the tiling is unique. There's only one way to do it, up to rotations and translations. For a square or a rectangle, you can tile the plane in many different ways. For instance, you could arrange them in columns and then slide these columns any way you like. There are also many tilings using non-convex sets, like this one, for instance. Now, later on, you're going to see more complicated examples of such tilings. Here are some fields of mathematics where tiling problems come up. I just put this slide here to show you everything that I'm not going to be talking about. So that's all of this. Well, actually, I will talk about Fourier analysis a little bit. There's a lot of work where more general tilings are considered. For instance, you can consider tilings where the set can also be rotated or reflected. More generally, you can also consider tilings where more than one tile is allowed. There are also other interesting extensions, for instance, multiple tilings, where each point is supposed to be covered a fixed number of times. Coverings, where the sets have to cover the whole space, but they don't necessarily have to be disjoint. Packings, they have to be disjoint, but they don't have to cover the whole space, and so on. In this talk, I'm only going to consider translational tilings. I'm always going to assume that the set is bounded, has finite and non-zero measure, and its boundary has measure zero. Here are some problems that we might want to look at. Given a set, can you tell whether it tiles the space? In some case, like for these sets here, it's obvious, but there are sets where it's really difficult to determine. Also, given a set that tiles the space in some way, can you also find a nice tiling? Or can you characterize all possible translation sets? A nice tiling in this talk will mean a periodic tiling, or even better, a lattice tiling. So just to clarify the terminology, a lattice tiling is going to be a tiling where the translation set is an n-dimensional lattice in Rn. So, for instance, this one. A periodic tiling is a tiling that has a period lattice, which is a subset of the translation set. This is not a lattice tiling, because not all consecutive translation vectors are identical, but it does repeat itself eventually, so this is periodic. Also, it has to be periodic in n different directions. Now, this is actually a question that's going to be relevant to the Fourier analytic problem I want to look at eventually. So let's discuss periodicity for a second. There's a conjecture that any set that tiles Rn by translations must also admit a periodic tiling. This is due to a number of different authors. I think it appeared at least implicitly in the book by Greenbaum and Shepard. The conjecture has been proved in dimension 1 for bounded sets in two papers by Lagares and Wang with some additional regularity assumptions, and then by Kolontzakis and Lagares without those assumptions. In fact, they proved a stronger statement, namely that any tiling has to be periodic. In dimensions 2 and higher, there are obvious examples of non-periodic tilings, but there are no examples known of sets that tile the space only in an aperiodic way. The conjecture has been proved in some special cases. Here are some of them. If we assume that the set in question is bounded and convex, then this has been known for some time. It was proved by Venkov in 1954 and then independently by McMullen. In fact, they proved a stronger statement that for any such set, if there is any tiling of Rn by translations, then the set has to be a symmetric polytope, and there has to be a lattice tiling that's stronger than periodic. This, by the way, is not true if you also allow the set to be rotated. If the set is assumed to be a topological disk, then that's a weaker statement than convex. And if it tiles the plane, then the same conclusion is true. It admits a lattice tiling. This was proved by these authors with some additional regularity assumptions, and then Kenyon removed those assumptions later on. That result is not true in dimensions 3 and higher. I'm going to show you an example later on. Here's another case when the conjecture is known. That's something that Kolontzakis and I did last year. If a set in R2 contains a unit square, and if it's contained in a slightly bigger square, and if it tiles the plane, then it also has a lattice tiling. So that could be some sort of an object looking like a postage stamp. The interesting thing about it is that the boundary could be very irregular. It could be fractal, for example. We don't assume anything about that. We don't know what the best value of epsilon would be. We have some funny value, 1 over 33 or something like that. It's artificial. We don't know what the optimal epsilon should be. Also, it could be interesting to look at what happens if E is close enough to a topological disk. Is the same result true?
What do you mean by best?
if it's contained in a really big square, and if it contains a square like this, then we don't really know anything about the set. It could be anything. So if it looks kind of like a postage stamp, then we can prove the result. So the question is, how wide can you make that? In some sense, it should be true that if it's close enough to a convex set or something like that, if it's roughly in one piece, then it's still true. But it's not clear what exactly that should mean.
Does the stamp result assume measurable
integrity? I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Does the stamp result assume measurability?
It does, but that's only so we could define tilings the way we did before. If you don't assume the set to be measurable, right, then you cannot define a tiling up to sets of measure zero. But if you correct the definition of tiling accordingly, then I think that then this is still true. And that is also false in dimensions 3 and higher for sets as regular as you like. Okay, so the main subject of this talk is actually a problem that comes up in Fourier analysis. Here's something that you usually learn in third year differential equations or something like that. If you take a function f in L2 on a unit interval, it can be expanded into a Fourier series, and that series is convergent to f in L2. Here's one way to reinterpret this. Let's say that the function is actually defined on the whole line. We extend it to a periodic function. And then we're going to replace the interval from 0 to 1, that's this, by any set that contains an entire period of f. So, for instance, I could remove this part of the interval, put it over here, and also remove that part, put it there. And this still gets exactly one period of f. So the same result is going to be true if I replace the interval from 0 to 1 by that set. So here's a question. Can we define some sort of an analog of Fourier sets, Fourier series on sets more general than say, intervals or rectangles or that sort of thing? Now, one observation that I'm going to start with is that the interval from 0 to 1 tiles the line by translations. The translation set is the set of all integers. And same is true for this set here marked in blue. It also tiles the line with the translation set equal to the set of all integers. I'm going to say that a set in Rn is a spectral set if the L2 space on this set has n orthogonal bases of exponentials. If there is some discrete set lambda in Rn such that the set of the corresponding exponential functions is a basis, the set lambda is going to be called a spectrum for E. There's a conjecture due to Fogliatti from 1974 that a set E is a spectral set if and only if it tiles the space by translations. Now, if this is the first time you see this conjecture, it's you can't really think of any reason why this should be true, right? It doesn't seem like one thing should be connected to the other. Turns out that it is actually true in all cases that have been checked so far. And somehow in each case it's true for a different reason. Originally, the conjecture was motivated by a question in functional analysis. The question was, given a set in Rn, can you define self-adjoint extensions of the operators I, d by dxj? And those self-adjoint extensions would have to be commuting. So that's a question about domains of those extensions. The current interest in this conjecture is, I think, motivated by connections with many other areas of mathematics. The conjecture is still unsolved in both directions, and that's even in one dimension. There are quite a few partial results. I'm going to describe some of them in a second. I'm going to start with some examples of sets that are known to be spectral. The most obvious example is the unit cube, so that's just the usual n-dimensional Fourier series. There's a more general result due to Fogliatti that's really easy to prove. It's essentially the same case as this. Namely, the conjecture is true if we assume that either the translation set or the spectrum here is a lattice. But there are also examples where a set is spectral, tiles the space and does not have a lattice tiling and does not have a lattice spectrum. For instance, the easiest example of this type is if you take the union of two intervals of equal length in R, say from 0 to 1 half and from 1 to 3 halves. That's the set marked in red here. It tiles the line in an obvious way. This is the first translate, the next one is blue, next one is green, and so on. It also has a spectrum which can be computed explicitly. That I'd like to discuss in some more detail is convex sets in the plane. If we assume that the set is convex and tiles the plane, then these are the examples that we looked at earlier. That's a rectangle or a hexagon. And we know that each one of them has a lattice tiling, and therefore it also has a lattice spectrum. It's more difficult to show that if a set is convex and if it has a spectrum, then it also tiles R2 by translation. So it has to be one of these two sets. That was proved by Josevich, Katz, Tao, and Kolontzakis. A similar result is true in Rn. This part is true for general convex sets. That's, again, the lattice case. This is true for sets with smooth boundary. Namely, it's known that such sets cannot be spectral. Another case that's kind of close to convex is if the set is densely packed. If you take a set in one dimension that almost fills out an interval. For instance, if you take a set of measure 1, here I have to assume that it's measurable, or otherwise I couldn't define the O2 space. And if it's contained in an interval of length less than 3 halves, then it tiles if and only if it has a spectrum, and moreover, the translation set or a spectrum has to be a lattice. The proofs of these results combine Fourier analytic methods with some combinatorics. So just to give you some idea of what's involved, I'm going to show you the proof that a unit disk is not a spectral set. Actually, the same proof works in RD, but it's just easier to draw a picture in a plane. Okay, so let's suppose that a disk has a spectrum, let's call it lambda, and then for a set of exponentials to span the L2 space, we need a certain density property. And basically, the number of points in lambda in a big disk of radius about n has to be of the order n squared. It's easy to prove. On the other hand, if you write out what orthogonality means, so you just write it down, you get that any lambda minus lambda prime has to be a zero of the characteristic of the Fourier transform of the characteristic function of the disk. Now you compute that Fourier transform and you find it zeros. Those zeros turn out to lie on circles. They're not quite equidistant here, but close enough. So anyway, within radius n, there are about n of them. And then here's what you say. If this is true, then anytime I have two points in the spectrum, let's say that I want to that my lambda prime is here, lambda is there, then the lambda has to lie on one of those circles translated so that they centered at that point. But that means that the number of possible different distances between those points is only of order n. Now, this is a well-known question in combinatorics. It's known as the Erdős distance problem. I think there is a $500 prize for solving it. The question is, given a discrete subset of the plane of cardinality, say m, what's the minimal number of distinct distances between those points? The conjecture is that it's almost m squared up to logarithmic factors. This is still unproved, but there are partial results available, and in particular, it's very easy to contradict this. Okay, so far we've been discussing cases when any possible tiling or spectrum would have to be a lattice. So now let's move on to the more complicated case when it does not have to be so. This example is just to show you that in high dimensions, even if you assume that the set is connected, you can still have a non-lattice tiling. For instance, take the red set, the two blocks. If you translate them over here, you get a box covered, then you translate that, you get a slab in three dimensions. Same for these two. So when you translate the whole thing, you can basically get the whole space. And then you can place these so they touch. Actually, I could also make that simply connected, but it would be a little bit more difficult to draw a picture. I'm just going to discuss the case when the set is a subset of R, and moreover, I'm only going to look at the case when E is a union of intervals with integer endpoints. We clearly have to solve this case before we can get around to solving anything like that. And it's clear that for any example of this type, that there's a corresponding example like this here. There are some other special cases that have been solved due to various subsets of this group of people. But there's only so much I can talk about in 45 minutes, so I'm going to have to leave that out. Okay, so let's consider the case when the set is a union of intervals of length 1 in R. So it can be written in this form. Once you start working this out, there's an algebraic problem that comes up. It turns out that Fogliati's conjecture is equivalent to the following problem. This is sort of elementary number theory / algebra. A set of this type types R by translations if and only if the following is true. We might as well assume that all the left endpoints are non-negative integers. Then we define the characteristic polynomial of A. You take the sum of powers of X with the exponents equal to A1, A2, and so on. Then the set E tiles R by translations if and only if this polynomial has n minus 1 roots on the unit circle such that their quotients are also roots of the same polynomial. This equivalence is basically due to Jorgensen and Peterson, that they wrote it down differently, but that's more or less what they proved. It's also easy to show that a polynomial of this form can never have more than n minus 1 such roots. So this has to maximize the number of those. Here's an example that gives you some idea of what's happening. Let's say that the set E is a union of intervals starting at 0, m to m, and so on. That set tiles the line to see that you just start with E, then you translate it by 1, so that's a green copy here. Then the next one is blue. You put it, it starts here where the green one ended, and so on. It is also a spectral set. To see that, we write down the corresponding characteristic polynomial. And then we look for the roots of that. So here's an example for m equal 3, n equal 5. All roots of that are going to be roots of unity. X to the n times m is going to be 0. It's going to be 1. So it's these points. Also, they're not supposed to be roots. They're not supposed to be cubic roots of unity. So you have to skip these. That means you can take these four, and then you cannot take any more of them. Because if I try to add one more here, then the ratio of these two would be a cubic root of unity, and that's not a root of that. Okay, so first question is, if the set tiles the line, can we prove that the polynomial A has such roots? Another question is, do they always have to look like this? For instance, do they always have to be roots of unity? There are some special cases in which we can prove that. So, instance, if we assume the polynomial A to be irreducible, then the conjecture is true. If we assume that the set A has only three numbers in it, then it's also true. And also if A has low degree. As I said, we can also ask whether these roots always have to be roots of unity. Again, the answer is yes. If the degree of A is low, that there are no examples known when such roots are not roots of unity, but otherwise we don't really know what's going on. The proofs are algebraic. There's a little bit of Galois theory and such. So we don't really know that much about one part of the conjecture, namely if A has a spectrum, does the corresponding set E tile the line? Except for what I just mentioned, we don't know very much about that. We know a little bit more in the other direction, namely if the set tiles the line, can we prove that A is spectral? So here's one way to go about that. We're going to characterize sets, finite sets that tile integers, or at least some of those sets, and then we're going to use that to prove a partial result in that direction. Now, instead of looking at tilings of the line by the set E, it's going to be convenient to look at tilings of the set of all integers by translates of the set of the left endpoints. Okay, so I'm going to be looking for conditions on A that guarantee that it tiles the line. For instance, if I take any set of two numbers, then I can tile the integers in the obvious way. I just take consecutive pairs of numbers here. Eventually, I get a whole interval, that then I start it over again and so on. There are sets that tile the integers in several non-equivalent ways. For instance, if I take three numbers 0 to 4, I can tile the integers like in this picture. So I first get two of these sets to overlap. That fills out the whole interval from 0 to 5. And then I start over again. But there's also a different non-equivalent way to do that. An example of a set that does not tile the line, this is probably the simplest one, is the set of numbers from 0 to 3. Okay, how about this one? What do you think? Okay, just to show you that it can get more complicated than that. This one is very easy, actually. I'm going to explain in a few minutes why. Here's a somewhat more complicated example. The interesting thing about this is that you have the set E, you have the translation set, which is basically B plus all of its translates by multiples of 900. And neither A nor B is contained in a subgroup of Z.
What means plus?
Plus means that you take all sums, and also that all of those sums are different. So it's just notation that's used here. And actually, right now I have reasons to believe that even this is fairly simple. It apparently can get a lot more complicated than that. Okay. Again, characterizing these sets turns out to be a question in number theory / algebra. A useful thing to have here is cyclotomic polynomials. We first rewrite the condition that A tiles the integers. It's easy to prove that any such tiling has to be periodic. And that essentially reduces the problem to factorizations of finite groups. So that there's a number, if A tiles the integers, and there's a number m, that's the period of the tiling, and a set B, which is a finite subset of the translation set, such that the sums A plus B are all different, and it's a complete residue set modulo M. Now, this can be rewritten using those polynomials I just defined. Remember that A of X was defined in this kind of way. This is equivalent to saying that if you multiply A of X and B of X, you get essentially this. Okay? Well, basically, when you multiply those two polynomials, you get all powers of X with exponents A plus B, and then these are all residues modulo M, so you get that. And then you factorize the right side. This factorizes into something called cyclotomic polynomials. If you don't know what that is, don't worry about it. And anyway, the point is that they all have to be there, and they all are irreducible, so each of them has to divide one of A or B. And then the question is how they're going to be divided between A and B. How do you split them up? There is a paper by Coven and Majerowicz. They, of course, didn't know about Fugledi's conjecture until recently, but this paper actually turns out to be very relevant to that problem. Namely, they formulated conditions which might characterize all sets that tile the integers by translations. These basically describe the way that those cyclotomic divisors are divided between A and B. It probably takes a couple of minutes to get used to those conditions and figure out what they mean. Now, there's no way I'm going to give you those few minutes right now. So instead, I'm just going to make a couple of comments. Colin Majerowicz proved that those conditions always imply that the set tiles Z. If the set tiles Z, then the first one always holds. That's an easy counting condition. The really essential one is this. And they proved that if the cardinality of A has at most two distinct prime factors. So the smaller one for which it could fail, A would have to be it would have to have cardinality at least 30 for this to fail. In a joint paper with Granville and Wang, we proved a partial result for the 3 prime case. It's not clear exactly how much we can get. But anyway, I should maybe explain what those conditions mean. So here's an easy case. If the cardinality of A is a prime, then what this means is that A, assuming that it also contains 0, has to be a set of this form. Therefore, if you look at the set that I showed you earlier, you can see very easily that it does not tile the integers. This is saying that the cardinality of A is 5. Now, from here, either all of those integers would have to be divisible by 5, or else it has to be a complete set of residues mod 5, which this is not, because you have 232 and 1007. You get 2 here and 2 there. And another case when those conditions can be sort of explained is here's more or less how you can interpret this. If you have two relatively prime numbers, M and N, A is equidistributed modulo each of them, that then it's also equidistributed modulo the product. So, for instance, if you look at this set, it has cardinality 6, and it's a complete residue set mod 6, so that's good. If you look at this one, it's equidistributed mod 2. There are 3 odd numbers, 3 even numbers. It's also equidistributed mod 3, but not mod 6. Therefore, it does not tile. Okay, so for this set, you could probably figure this out anyway. But same applies, for example, to this set. It does not tile the integers for exactly the same reason. Okay, and just to wrap it up, if you still remember what Fugledi's conjecture was, if you can prove this characterization of sets that tile integers, that's going to prove one part of the conjecture, namely that tiling implies spectrum in dimension 1. Because then any set of this form has a spectrum. This can be constructed explicitly, and the roots of A that you need to find are the roots of those cyclotomic polynomials I just mentioned. And moreover, you get that this spectrum can be chosen in a way that depends only on the translation set. And then you can combine that with a result of Lagarias and Wang, who reduced the general one-dimensional case to the case of n intervals of equal length. So that would solve one part of it. I don't really know whether to expect this characterization to be true in all cases. I guess 2 months ago I would have said yes, now I'm not so sure. But that's a different story. Okay, so I guess that's a good place to quit.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Is there any quick algorithm to tell that it is a set of integers, right?
Well, it depends on what you mean by algorithm. Okay, first of all, you can prove that any such tiling is periodic. And there's an easy upper bound on the period of such any such tiling. So I guess you could check all sets within a certain finite interval, and that would check whether it tiles or not. The problem is it would not be very efficient, because the current best known bounds for the period of such tilings are huge. They like exponential as opposed to something much lower that's really expected. So that's another open question that would be nice to study. Also, the problem is wide open in n dimensions, even if you look at just unit cubes. In that case, it's not even known whether tilings have to be periodic. Yeah, there's a paper by Segedi that has a partial result in that direction.
More questions? No, thank you very much.